American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part of roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.AmericanLogHomesAndCabins.com.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of Black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for Black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM.
Our weekly environment spot with John Gibbons. And let's talk about sport. And the reason I want to talk about sport is I'm really looking forward to the Olympic Games in Paris next month. But then I've been reading about the threat to the Games caused by excessive heat. And when I say the threat to the Games, that this is actually going to be very difficult. I know the temperature is going to be the same for everyone, but some people react differently to extreme heat than others. And it's going to be very uncomfortable viewing for a lot of the spectators if they're not in the shade, and even if they're in the shade. But what about the poor athletes?
Good evening, Matt. Yeah, I mean, we saw, for example, in the last Olympic Games, which were deferred to 2021, that was in Tokyo, we saw temperatures above 34 degrees centigrade and also humidity approaching 70%. And they were described as the hottest games in history, and competitors experienced symptoms such as vomiting and fainting at finish line. Some of them were carted off in wheelchairs. And one of the tennis players actually said that he believes somebody is going to drop dead on a tennis court in these conditions. Now, you might say 34 degrees, that's not so bad. That's if you're sitting in the shade with a nice cool drink. Even a super fit athlete, the problem here is they're out in the blazing sunshine. And most of these sports, of course, are occurring in daylight hours, which is another huge problem. So if you're out on an athletics track, for example, running or sprinting or whatever, in broad daylight, 34 degrees up in the stadium, that might feel to you down on the track to be well over 40 degrees, maybe 45 degrees. And the issue really here is that we're approaching the limits of human physiology and human endurance. I mean, these athletes are superbly trained. They're well able to cope with almost every condition. The issue really here is that we're approaching, as I say, those human limits.
Yeah, because this was a major study done, and it was a comparison between the 1924 Olympics and the temperatures that applied in Paris in July 24 as against what's expected in July 2024.
That's right. Apparently 1924 was the first Olympics in which Irish athletes took part.
As a nation for Ireland. There were lots of Irish Olympic winners prior to independence.
I stand corrected. As part of the Free State, let's say, that's correct. But what we've seen basically is a rise in temperatures, a steady rise in temperatures over the intervening century. This, again, is hardly news. And what we've seen, in how this plays itself out, Matt, is that the Paris now is experiencing 23 more hot days a year and 9 more scorching days a year. And the problem, of course, is these are clustered and concentrated into the hot summer months. July and August are particularly dangerous. And of course, July and August, this is the Olympics time of the year. So the real issue is, can we continue to have sports like this happening, particularly in daylight? Because as you know, a lot of these events are timed for television audiences. So they really run them on the basis of that. And I think if you can imagine an event like the 10,000 metres, the marathon, running that in 30, 35 degrees centigrade. And the issue here is somebody at this Olympics or at a major sporting event, whether it's a tennis tournament or a soccer tournament, is going to keel over dead one of these days.
A listener says, I was in Paris a few years ago and it hit 40 degrees. France has had some extreme heat events.
Absolutely, Matt.
So you even see also the Tour de France cyclists as well. Sometimes they get into deep trouble.
That's right. I mean, I remember being in France, in fact, in 2003, in late July, early August, and that was the killer heat wave of 2003. I mean, we've really, since the turn of the 21st century, France, and of course right across Europe, has seen record heat wave after record heat wave. So these are not new, but we need to be super careful not to kind of go, oh, well, we've always had heat waves. No. In the last two and a half decades, we're seeing a huge rise in extreme temperature events. For example, I was back in France in 2019, and we ran into 42 degrees centigrade, Matt. It was miserable, almost unbearable temperatures. And we kind of came back with our tail between our legs.
Does Denmark have a John Gibbons?
Indeed.
The reason I ask is Danish livestock farmers are to be taxed for cow and pig-made greenhouse gas emissions.
That's right, Matt. This idea was floated a couple of years back in New Zealand. They called it the burp tax, or the fart tax, if you prefer, but it's more burping than flatulence, just to be technically correct. And what this is about, basically, is levying a tax on ruminants. And the reason that ruminants are a particular problem, of course, is that they produce huge amounts of the powerful heat-trapping gas, methane, which on a 20-year timescale is about 80 times more potent per molecule than the equivalent of CO2. So when you get a lot of methane, whether it's from natural gas release or whether it's from livestock, you have they create a strong global warming effect. So basically what the Danish government are proposing here, and this I should stress, is a deal that was negotiated between the government and the farming organisations. And I was listening to an interview with one of the farming organisation reps earlier today, and something you don't hear in this country very often. But he said one of the reasons that we, the farming groups, welcome this is that we want to be seen as respectable, responsible actors. We are aware that the public in Denmark are concerned about climate change. We know we in the livestock industry have a huge problem, and we're putting our hands up and saying, yes, we consent to this taxation, because there is a concept called the polluter pays. And in Ireland and in most other places, this concept does not apply. If you have a huge livestock herd, for example, you're a massive contributor to carbon and methane emissions, but you're paying nothing. Now that cost instead is borne by the wider public, and in particular, of course, it's borne by people in the global south who are having their lives disrupted on a daily and a weekly basis. So the purpose of taxation like this is to try to tip the scales away. We still need agriculture, of course we do, but we need to have more low carbon agriculture, Matt, and less high carbon. I will also stress in the Danish example that the money being raised for this is all being ring-fenced to help Danish farmers to transition to lower carbon forms of agriculture. This is not some kind of stealth tax designed to drive them off the land or any of those cliches. This is about Danish farmers behaving responsibly and in a grown-up way and saying, we acknowledge we have a problem. We're not pretending, like some people, that we don't have a problem. We recognise it, and we want to work with the government towards basically reducing our impact and being better citizens.
Go to Australia for me and tell us about the latest belief about the damage done to the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, this again has been ongoing. I mean, for example, 1998 there was a huge bleaching event in the Barrier Reef, and 1998 was also the hottest year of the 20th century. And I call 1998, Matt, the good old days. All 10 of the hottest years ever recorded, 1998 wouldn't get a look in now. They've all occurred, by the way, in the last 10 years. So what we're seeing now increasingly is rising sea temperatures, and this is playing itself out in damage to coral systems. Now, probably worth explaining a little bit how important coral is. It's reckoned that only about 1% of the world's oceans are covered in coral, but they're the nurseries to about a quarter of all marine life. So typically a bleaching event occurs when the water temperature exceeds a certain very, very specific threshold. Essentially what the coral does, it has this symbiotic relationship with the type of fungi that above a certain temperature, it expels it. And basically when it expels it, it turns white. So that's the so-called bleaching event. Now, what can happen in that instance is that as temperatures drop, if temperatures return, the coral can survive. The issue really is that we're seeing more and more bleaching events, more and more damage to coral. And essentially, coral, of course, I should stress, is a living structure. These are basically animals at a particular part of... So these are not plants, these are actually animals, a very ancient form of animal. And the coral, for example, the Great Barrier Reef, is the largest living organism in the world. Absolutely massive. It has, of course, also, apart from temperature damage, it has been damaged by, for example, by the government in Australia cutting pathways through it to allow ships to bring coal to China and so on. It has suffered from over-tourism. It has suffered also, of course, from water pollution. So, but these coral reefs are the nurseries of the ocean. These are where fish go to breed and where other marine species have a sanctuary against, I suppose, to survive and to cling on. So losing our coral reefs is an incredibly dangerous situation. They're the real indicator of marine, I suppose, health and well-being. And as the coral reefs begin to become stressed, as I say, they eject their partner creatures, and then they begin the process of dying. But they are hardy and they will recover. And of course, the key here, I'm sorry to say this yet again, the only thing that can protect coral reefs in the longer term is a reduction in carbon emissions. Now, that means, in simple terms, Matt, all that stuff that we do, all the burning, all the flying, all the SUVs, all that stuff that is ripping out carbon emissions, they're also destroying the world's oceans.
A couple of other things I want to finish with, and this is one you will not have been expecting, but a listener wants to know, did you see Rammstein, the fire display in the RDS last Sunday night? Are you aware of this? The German heavy metal band, yep, who apparently were so loud they could be heard up to 15 kilometres away, but also the pyrotechnics display and the flamethrowers and the lights could be seen from space.
I saw some online clips. I'm not a heavy metal fan, so I wasn't there. Yeah, I mean, what can you say about that? It's I suppose the impact, by the way, of huge events like this, whether it's big sporting events like the Olympics or whether it's major music events like Taylor Swift or Rammstein, the biggest impact on the environment is the people getting there. That far and away the biggest issue is how people get to these events. So maybe Rammstein, that would be mostly a local audience. So the real issue really for most of these events in terms of the ecological impact, Matt, whatever about big blasts of flame, in the scheme of things, that's relatively small. The big issue is if 20,000 people arrive at your concert and 10,000 of them or 15,000 of them have arrived by aircraft, that is what causes the spiraling emissions from things like entertainment and from sport. And we see that, for example, like with the Olympics, we expect 1.5 million tons of carbon emissions just directly linked to the Olympics. And that, of course, is the other side of sport and entertainment, that while, as we said earlier, they're being impacted on the one hand by climate change, they're also very generously contributing to the crisis.
Okay, very briefly, one other thing. Tell us about the study from Wales about the impact of reducing the road speeds to 20 and 30 miles per hour. They're in miles per hour rather than kilometres.
That's right. This, again, is in urban areas. And the biggest issue or the biggest conclusion from this is that they've got a reduction from 681 injuries in a particular period. This is October to December of 2022. And then the equivalent period the following year, it dropped to 463. So roughly, they dropped about 35 to 40% in injuries simply by having 20 mile an hour, which in our money would be about a 30 kilometre zones. And I was thinking about this matter earlier, actually. The street that I live on in Dunleary, I have no idea what the speed limit is. There aren't even signs in our urban areas. And what we know, and this study bears it out, and we've seen this time and time again, we need to lower our speed limits in urban areas to make them safe for all road users. There's nobody should be driving through a town or a city or a village at 50 kilometres an hour. That is for country roads and upwards. And yet we see that. And I think a lot of the time people are unaware of the speed that they're doing themselves. We need much more. I'm not a huge fan of speed bumps, but I think, for example, you know those signs that flash your speed as you approach them? I think they're fantastic because they let people know and they give them positive feedback.
Thank you, John Gibbons.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
Today FM.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.AmericanLogHomesAndCabins.com.